to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is a show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution, but are all too often we don't think enough about them. Our goal is to break up complicated topics into small enough bits that we can integrate some aspect into our lifestyle. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. We encourage and welcome your questions. No matter what our spiritual beliefs are, at one time or another, we have all questioned if life goes on after death. Some people find answers through searching various aspects of spirituality. Some migrate to religion and simply hope for it. Some people never even search for truth but deny it to the day they die. And some people bump into such strange phenomena that they're forced to deal with it, whether they want to or not. The latter is the situation we're about to discuss. Today's guest is Paul Davids, and he believes that a deceased being is intentionally trying to make contact with him. This is truly extraordinary, as it's usually the other way around. We're going to hear Paul's story firsthand so he can convince both you and me that this unique story is indeed true. Our show is titled Life After Death. Paul Davids is the author of An Atheist in Heaven. He has been thrust into a set of circumstances which required him to completely reevaluate his worldview. Paul is a Princeton-educated psychology graduate, an award-winning Hollywood writer, and with six Star Wars books to his credit, which he co-authored with his wife. He was a film production coordinator on 79 Marvel production films, plus the classic Transformers episodes. And he has written, produced, and/or directed 12 full-length films. And he has many more accolades to his credit. Paul Davids, welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you, David. You know, I just wanted to clarify, the 79 episodes were the Transformers. Those were the original animated segments that we produced at Marvel.
Oh, okay.
So that was early in my career in media. It was one of my launching pads, let's say, for all that followed.
Okay, great. Thanks for that correction. Now, to help our listeners understand your story, let me see if I can bring them the listeners up to speed by saying that our guest, yourself, Paul Davids, worked in the film industry all his life, and one of his closest friends, Forrest J. Ackerman, who was a pioneer in creating horror and science fiction movies for some 60-plus years, was a lifelong atheist. Before Ackerman died in 2008, he told Paul and others that if there was a life after death, he would try to communicate that back to those still alive. Paul and others believe he has done just that, and I suppose is still doing it. The book Paul Davids has written, An Atheist in Heaven, which I read and thoroughly enjoyed, is a detailed explanation of what has occurred since Ackerman's death in 2008. Did I get that right? Is there anything you want to add or subtract to that, Paul?
I think that in basic, it's right, but Fari really was an atheist and disbeliever. And when he said, you know, about communicating back, it was said almost tongue in cheek. I mean, he took the position that when you die, it's like a light bulb going out. And, you know, he wrote essays on his atheism.
Why was he an atheist? Was he an atheist just because he didn't like religion, or he bought into science, or he didn't want to look at it, or was he a seeker and he looked at the information and couldn't buy into it? Do you have any feel for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange background in a way. Look, he was born in 1916. Okay. And grew up in the days of the silent movies. And he was not the favorite of his parents. They preferred the other brother, who died in World War II at the Battle of the Bulge. He was really pretty much raised by his grandparents. Now, his grandparents tended towards spiritualism. They used Ouija boards. I think they participated in some seances. And they tried to interest Fari in religion. I think they exposed him to like 10 different branches of Christianity, plus Judaism, just to try to get him to appreciate religion. But he never did. He rebelled against it when he was young. And when World War II came, it reinforced his negativity toward a belief in God. Okay. I mean, he said his wife was a German Jew who got out of Europe before the Holocaust. But he said that, you know, if there's a supreme being and he let that happen, what happened in World War II, he said, not anybody who would be a friend of mine wouldn't want to know him. So if it comes to visit, he's knocking at the wrong door if he let that happen. So that was kind of the way he dealt with it. But, you know, he was a he was an educated person, so educated, really. He didn't make the science fiction and horror films, as you said. He was the foremost promoter of science fiction in America and perhaps the world. From the early days of science fiction, he brought it into the mainstream. He saw it as futurism. He edited Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, which all the kids absolutely loved, adored. While I was growing up, I was a fan from, you know, I was hardly even a teenager. So when he said to me what you described, well, it was toward the end of his life. He died at age 92, December 4th, 2008. And I said to him, Fari, you know, I know you're fixed in your atheism, but have you given any thought to the possibility you could be wrong? And, you know, he came back with, well, you know, I doubt very, very seriously I'm wrong. I've been an atheist all my life, and I intend to be to my dying breath. He says, but on the off chance that I wake up to the big science fiction convention in the sky after I die, he said, of course, I'll be busy with a reunion with all my favorite science fiction producers and actors and my dear wife, Wendane. He said, but, you know, if the party dies down at some point, he says, maybe I would drop you a line. And then he would sort of wink and he says, you know, but don't count on it. So it wasn't done like, you know, this is some promise to me that it's going to be a big experiment. No, it was almost an offhanded remark. But the thing that's so telling about it was he said, maybe I would drop you a line. He was an editor. He dealt with lines of text his whole life. And changing manuscripts, revising manuscripts, crossing things out. And when the strangeness started for me, it was the week after a huge tribute for him in Hollywood at the Egyptian Theater. And I wasn't the first one the strangeness started for, by the way. It happened to two Canadian filmmakers who'd made a movie about him first. But about a week later, I was dropped a line. And what I mean by that was I had a document that I had printed out. I knew the document was ordinary. I knew the ink was dry. And I picked up the document about an hour and a half after it was printed out, and I wanted to go over it. It related to things that could have been relevant for 2008 taxes, things like business deductions from business lunches and business phone calls. And so sort of like almost a calendar. And when I was out of the room for about 5 minutes at our Santa Fe vacation home, I'm alone in the house. I'm out of the room for 5 minutes. And when I came back in, the document had been changed. The four words in the document had been neatly, and I mean precisely, blacked out. And whatever was used, whether it was an ink or a dye or a solvent or a paint, it was still moist. So I knew it had happened right then. There was nobody present. And this was something I could tell right away. It could not have been an accident. Impossible. You know, this was not, it wasn't a printer error. That was ruled out by the timing, and the document had been dry. It wasn't like water dripping from a ceiling and splattering on something, or a leaky pen in the bed. Because if you could see this, which you can see, by the way, when you read An Atheist in Heaven, which is the book that covers it. Also, I mentioned I did make a documentary film first when the evidence began to become very compelling. And that documentary is called The Life After Death Project. So there you can see the
document. Can that still be seen? Where would somebody see that?
Absolutely. It's easy. I mean, Amazon has both the book, which it has as a hardback, and it has it as a Kindle, an ebook. And then the DVD of The Life After Death Project is at Amazon in a 2-DVD package, because I also made a sequel. But you can also, you know, rent it, stream it online, Amazon Prime. It's out there. So the point is that those words were targeted.
What words were they?
The words were spoke to Joe Amodei. Sounds pretty strange, right? On a certain date of that year, I had picked up the phone and called someone I had never spoken to before, Joe Amodei, a distributor in New York of DVDs. We had one conversation. I wanted to see if he was interested in a film I had made called Jesus in India. It was about the missing years of Christ. He wasn't interested. That was the only conversation that we had. And so why spoke to Joe Amodei? Well, at first I had no idea why this would be blacked out. And it puzzled me. It bothered me. It gnawed at me for days, really. But I had heard from the two Canadian filmmakers that they heard from Fari within an hour of rapping on his crypt and saying hello the day of his tribute. And so I was set up to look in that direction and wonder. Well, Fari loved wordplay, word games, puns, words within words, names within words. Let me just give you one or two examples. On the cover of Famous Monsters, if it wanted to say spectacular issue, well, Fari's nickname was Ack, A-C-K. So it wouldn't say spectacular issue. It would say spec, and then there'd be a hyphen. It would say Ack, and then Euler. Okay. So he put his name in there. Or if once he signed an autograph for me saying, hooray for Harryhausen. That was about the famous special effects movie maker, Ray Harryhausen. But he didn't write it, hooray for Harryhausen. He wrote H-O-O hyphen and then Ray for Harryhausen. So he loved names within names. And that was the clue to understanding what happened and that it was from him and it was his personality and it was his teasing, because he was really saying spoke to Joe Mo, not spoke to Joe Amodei. The name Mo is right there in the middle of it. And who was Joe Mo? Joe Mo was his caretaker for the last 10 years of his life. Joe Mo was the principal hand in organizing this great tribute that had happened for Fari. So why would he tell me that he spoke to Joe Mo? Well, when I called Joe Mo, it was mainly to ask him whether he had old documents of Fari, where Fari crossed out, how did he edit? You know, I wanted to see, did he black out words completely and neatly like this? Or did he just take a pencil and draw a line? But before I could even ask Joe that question, Joe came right at me and he said, Paul, he said, you know, I've been a skeptic my whole life. I'm like Fari. You know, I don't believe in any of this stuff, but something happened to me I can't explain. He said, you can call it an apparition, I guess. You could call it something supernatural or surreal, but it was an experience moments before awakening, which seemed more real than reality itself, in which Fari came into my room and thanked me for the tribute in his own mischievous and very funny way. He told me what the dialogue was. And then he said, suddenly he's wide awake. He's looking at the same scene in his room. Everything's the same except Fari's gone. He said, Paul, it was like Fari came and spoke to me. That was the moment of, should we call it revelation, or it shocked me because I suddenly saw, he's saying, Fari came and spoke to me, and I was being told, spoke to Jobo.
Okay.
So it's as though it seemed at that moment that I was had been given confirmation of the fact that Joe's experience wasn't some sort of dream or hallucination, but that it really happened. Fari in spirit had come to him and spoken to him. So, David, at that moment, that hypothesis entered my mind, but I didn't jump to that conclusion. I went to scientists. I took that ink obliteration. I kept chain of evidence on the document. I got in touch with the chairman of the chemistry department at Indiana University, who's a very, very famous forensic chemist, testifies in dozens or hundreds of court cases where chemistry is the evidence. So Dr. Jay Siegel, who was then chairman of the department, agreed to begin scientific testing on the document. He soon involved his colleague, Dr. John Allison of the College of New Jersey. The two men had been, they'd worked together as professors at Michigan State University for many years, and they're world-class experts for the grants they received to do projects involving inks, paints, dyes, solvents. So if anybody should have been able to figure this thing out, it's those two men. But instead
So what were they looking for? The type of ink, was it different than the ink that was on the, you know, that was printed from the processor? What were they looking for?
Oh, it's a good question, and I'm going to give you the answer, but I want to mention first that last night between midnight and 2 a.m. Pacific Coast time, I was on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. John Allison of the College of New Jersey, who spent at least a half an hour of the show going over his scientific search, his findings, the mystery that became compounded, and the fact that he became haunted by strange phenomena himself as he investigated. What was he looking for? He wanted to know the exact chemistry of the ink, how was it done, and could he reproduce it using inks or solvents or dyes? He used laser desorption, mass spectrometry was involved. He took little samples of it, and he began experiments that went on for 3 years, because instead of being an easy problem, he found that there was no way that he could reproduce what happened. He tried hundreds of times using every solvent that he knew of to see if the ink that was on the page, that was on printed out onto the page, could be made so dark that it opaqued out words so that you couldn't even see the words. What was the chemistry of the ink that was doing that, and where did that ink come from, since there wasn't enough ink there in the letters to opaque anything out, no matter which one of 300 solvents he tried. He made it a class project for his students. Semester after semester, he'd have classes of 30 students, each trying their own experiments. And to sum it up from Dr. Jay Siegel of Indiana University, he went on record saying, sometimes there are circumstances which simply can't be explained by your five senses or by all the tools of science. And I believe that this is such a case. It remains a mystery. Bottom line, David, is that my hypothesis that this was a message from another realm by the spirit of Fari Ackerman, who'd been my mentor for decades, still alive and existing, personality still the same, still with a sense of humor and a sense of mischief, that this was his first message to me to say, I was wrong, to correct the record, and let me know, if you will, that great science fiction convention in the sky he talked about, you know, something happened after he died. He's still around. And
how long after he died did the inkblot occur?
Very good question. He died December 4th, 2008. Nothing happens until the weekend of March 8th, 2009. That's a couple of months. It's the day of his tribute was the first thing that happened, as I said, to the Canadian filmmakers. It was about 1 week later that the ink obliteration occurred. And it was during that week that Joe Moe had the apparition, if you will, of Fari coming to him to thank him for the tribute. So okay. It was all connected in time.
Okay. Now, Paul, what were your beliefs in the afterlife before Ackerman died?
It's a very good question. Okay. First of all, I was raised without any religious practices. You know, ethnically Jewish, my parents were not practicing. I was not bar mitzvahed. So, you know, we didn't go to a temple or a church. We didn't participate in prayer. In college, I encountered the writings of the Hindu yogi Paramahansa Yogananda. I read what he wrote about reincarnation. I became interested in that. I read some of the case studies, but still it was just all an exercise in intellectual study. It wasn't a matter of belief. The first thing that happened to me that really affected my belief happened back in 1983. I was a segment producer on a television show some of your listeners may remember. It was called Lie Detector. It was a show by F. Lee Bailey, the lawyer. He was involved in the O.J. Simpson trial.
Right.
And we would bring in guests who had a story to tell, and they'd want to be wired up to a lie detector and see whether their story held up or whether we would confront them on the air and say, you're fabricating this, you're not telling the truth, or maybe it would come out inconclusive. I chose a case of Dorothy Allison, a New Jersey psychic detective who came out to California to be on the show with a dossier of letters from police departments saying that she had been instrumental with her psychic means in solving many important cases, principally murder cases, where a corpse of the victim had not been found until she came in, would speak to the parents, would touch clothing of the victim, and she'd come up with clues, and she'd describe where, what the surroundings were of where the remains would be found. And she claimed she was receiving this from the spirit of the murder victim. Now, this case was so convincing to me. Not only did she have the letters from the police, some of whom I actually talked to, But she did pass the lie detector test, and the one particular case of a body of a victim that was found was so extraordinary. I had to come to the conclusion, yes, there's something to this. Yes, there must be a spirit realm. Now, whether people become angels or what kind of manifestation this spirit is, who knows? Where does this energy, the spirit energy, exist? Who knows? I mean, it seems to be right here, not up in the sky. I mean, Jesus said, if you go by those teachings, he said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. So implying something about this realm that many call heaven is right here, but we can't see it. Just like we can't see television waves or radio waves or the waves of the internet, or, you know, now you can take your iPhone into an elevator, solid steel. You could still call anywhere in the world. The waves go right through that steel, right through the very molecules, completely unimpeded on their path. And it just shows you that there's information all around us in the form of waves and radiation and other kinds of energy that is, it's intelligent signals, but we can't understand that unless we have a device to decode it, like a television, you know, like an iPhone. This is my kind of theory, my feeling. You talk about practical spirituality. This is how I kind of resolve it myself, that life goes on after death. We change form, like the caterpillar becomes a butterfly. We become a different form that doesn't rely on a material body. And that new form of existence that we have after we die is capable of reaching out to and contacting the living. So that's what I think happened to me, being contacted. And in my book, which I co-wrote with Dr. Gary Schwartz, we can talk about him too, in An Atheist in Heaven, there is a glossary at the end that itemizes all of the strange things that happened since Fari died. And it's well over 100. Things that can't be explained, of all different kinds of phenomena. And to conclude this part of the thought, I spoke to author Richard Matheson before he died, very famous science fiction writer, and he wrote What Dreams May Come, became a movie with Robin Williams about the afterlife. And he knew Fari Ackerman. He knew Fari Ackerman, and he said, Paul, I agree with you. He said, I do believe that what's happening here is that Fari is correcting himself. He's setting the record straight, as he said he would do. And he's taken it upon himself to let it be known, not just to me, but there are it's a number of people that have had these experiences related to Fari since he died, not just the filmmakers. But there's a man named Jack Kelleher who wrote a chapter of our book. The things have happened now to Dr. John Allison, who's contributed chapters to the book. My co-author, Dr. Gary Schwartz, who's a Harvard PhD, taught psychology at Yale, now tenured professor at the University of Arizona, Tucson. Strange stuff related to Fari started to happen to him, too. So
most people, Paul, yeah, who want to get in touch with the spiritual world, they go to a medium and they try, yeah, to find one that, you know, that is credible. You did that. What did you find in that?
Yes. And it wasn't my idea. It was Dr. Gary Schwartz, who has studied mediums for 15 years at University of Arizona. He has what is it called? The Laboratory for Advances in Consciousness and Health.
Okay.
And he's worked with dozens of mediums, and he separates those who are sort of the wannabes or think they can do it but really can't, the pretenders, from the smaller group of people who really seem to have an ability to do this. And the two that we worked with, it was a year apart. First, there was Catherine Yunt. A year later, there was an Israeli psychic who came to Tucson. Orit Ishyemeni Tamer is her name. And with each of them, they were told nothing about me. They weren't even told my name. I was simply told that I was the man with the camera because they agreed I could videotape. You can see all this in the Life After Death project that we've talked about. And it's discussed in great detail in An Atheist in Heaven. So I'm there as the man with the camera, and they're only told the first name of the person that I'm interested in being in touch with, Forrest. And what flowed out of them, each of them, in the hour that followed, was so filled with relevant information that was specific enough to Fari. And
do you have any examples that you can remember?
Oh, there are so many. Let me go to Orit first, because she was able to say this man you're looking to talk to was sort of an atheist. She said he made money from writing. She said, I see money from books. And then she pinned it down and she said, it was a magazine. She said, it was a strange magazine. She said he collected she said, I see strange, weird kind of dolls. Well, what she was seeing, she didn't have the word for monster. You know, Hebrew was her language. And in English, she didn't know the word for monster. But she did say it was sort of like Yoda, these little strange dolls filling his house. And that's true. His 18-room house, we call the Acker Mansion, was filled with props from the movies, little creatures that had been constructed to be in horror or science fiction films back in the day. She said that he's sort of like a Pied Piper to the young people, but the parents don't like this. They're kind of afraid of him. They're not happy when their teenagers are sort of going after him. Now, this was true, too, because his magazine, Famous Monsters, you know, this was a magazine. If you got caught with it in school, if a teacher found it, you know, she'd throw it away. You know, this was not considered literature. It wasn't what you were supposed to be reading. So the medium saw all of this. She described his wife. She said, as far as his atheism is concerned, because we asked, now, what does he think now? And she laughed, and she said, now he knows it's all much, much bigger than he ever could have imagined when he was alive. So that was interesting. So like he'd entered a larger realm, a larger sphere. And when I asked her about the ink, this was the last question, because she said he's fading at the end of the hour. She didn't know if she could answer another question. I said, what about the ink, the ink? She said, he says, it's me. He says, it's mine. It's mine. So in that psychic reading, if you will, he took credit for having produced that ink obliteration, that I was right. And yeah. She was told nothing, absolutely nothing, David. The other psychic got a lot of things about him physically correct. She described his expressions. She, you know, he always had this expression of raising his eyebrows, and she mentioned that. She mentioned his love of play on words, wordplay, and his sense of humor. These things you can't just come up with accidentally. I mean, he loved King Kong, was his favorite movie of that type for years and years. King Kong was called the eighth wonder of the world. Well, she said she was hearing music that had a sort of a Congo beat. Now, I just thought that was strange that she'd even have a word that's that close to Kong, you know, in the middle of a reading like that.
Right.
You know? And then another thing that was kind of really curious to me, he prided himself in owning the original Brontosaurus model, that dinosaur that was used in the original black and white King Kong movie. I mean, this thing was decrepit. It was falling apart. It had a long neck. It could move around metal parts, but falling apart. And it was probably worth a fortune. And she said, at one point in the seance, she said, why is he showing me giraffes? She said, I'm seeing giraffes. No, she says, it's a giraffe. She said, no, I'm not sure it's a giraffe, but I'm seeing big, long neck, an animal with a big, long neck, big, long neck. And she draws out her hands like she's a stretched, you know, neck. And I thought right away, the brontosaurus, you know, and she's talking about Congo. So there was reality to...
You know, the other thing, one of the things that in your book that I thought was interesting that came out of that, one of your seances, I think it was the second one, but I'm not sure, that Ackerman said that he was doing research in the spiritual world.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes. Now, let me
tell
you.
Now, that's odd to me. I could see why we would do research on the spiritual world, but what would the spiritual world be doing research on us for and communication with us?
Yeah, on how to communicate with us, to bridge the gap between the worlds. And let me tell you when that happened. There had been many strange phenomena happening in the house I called the Acker Mansion, that 18-room house that after Fari passed, well, it was completely remodeled. he sold it, and it was remodeled before he passed. And it's owned by a man named Mark Rawlings. And strange phenomena had been happening in that house. I learned about it in the movie The Life After Death Project. I interviewed two of the tenants there who described strange things that were happening. In one case, the strange things happening, it was much like what had happened to scientist Dr. John Allison doing the laboratory work in New Jersey. So there was a parallel there. So at one point, Mark Rawlings heard about the Life After Death Project, and he invited me to come to the house to bring a team of researchers to stay. We stayed days and nights. I mean, we were there three nights. And Gary Schwartz arranged, he chose the mediums that came. There were scientists that came, and there were mediums. And Dr. John Allison did come. And in An Atheist in Heaven, in our book, he wrote the chapter that we call The Return to the Acker Mansion. So we had Suzanne Wilson, who's an Arizona psychic, and Jamie Clark. And on a Thursday night in the Acker Mansion, they held a seance. And for a couple of hours, information just streamed out of Suzanne, and we saw some strange phenomena happening in the room. And we filmed it all. So as far as this information about them doing research, as the other world was described to us, it was like Fari had reconnected with a lot of either friends that he knew in this life who are now in spirit, or people he had admired in this life and may never have met. They were interested in being able to reach out to us, the living. And that's what was meant by, you know, they're doing research. Some of this communication is experiments from them to us. Like David, we call it instrumental transcommunication, where our instrumentality, be it a computer or a video camera, a tape recorder, even a telephone, is used, and it picks up words. It picks up information that apparently is coming from that other realm. When it's electronic voice phenomena, where you actually get a voice communicating with you, I mean, there are people that say they have heard the voice of their deceased relatives caught on tape in these kinds of circumstances, and they're convinced it's that person because the voice, the intonation, the way of speaking, it's all the same. So we've only had these devices now for, what, a century? So on the other side, if they want to increase communication with us, well, they're working with our own instrumentality.
Now, Gary Schwartz did some experiments with some of these type of electronic gadgets. You know, what was he doing to try to determine if there was an aura in the room that was not the aura of the people that were there? What was that all about?
Okay, he took two different approaches to that experimentation. And he devised double-blind experiments. He devised computer software to measure communication with the spirit world, so you could actually see it indicated on a bar graph on your computer sweeping by in front of you in real time while you're attempting the communication, and see whether you get a response. By it's an electromagnetic field effect that's picked up by these tiny sensors. So he has sensors around the computer using software he's designed, and gets yes, no types of responses. And that measures all different kinds of electromagnetic fields or radiation. It might be gamma rays. He has a scientific paradigm for it, so he filters out background radiation. He knows then he's measuring something that goes above and beyond the radiation that surrounds us all the time. That's one type of experiment. Another type deals with light, where he's got these very expensive cameras, in very, very cold rooms that are completely dark. And I don't understand why the temperature has to be so low. But he will speak to spirit, and he'll ask for spirit to create a photographic effect with photons of light in complete total darkness. And he measures it against a control group where the camera has the opportunity to record light, but no request has been made of spirit. He's gotten positive results, and he has been published in peer-reviewed journals. So this is cutting-edge research where Gary says the science fiction of yesterday is at the verge of becoming the science fact of tomorrow.
Yeah. I suspect he needs a very cold room to keep the background noise of the electronics down at a very low level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, again, in the movie, The Life After Death Project, which we talked about, which you can find easily at Amazon, I filmed in his laboratory. And in the book, An Atheist in Heaven, which just came out 2 months ago, by the way, Gary wrote, I think, about 7 of the chapters. So he has written about his experiments, his methodology, the strange things that happened to him when he got involved with the Fari Ackerman case. So you get his testimony as a scientist, what happened to him. You get the firsthand account of what happened to Dr. John Allison. The bottom line is, this is real. It's being done in a scientific way. Even the executive director of the Skeptic Society and the publisher of Skeptic Magazine, Michael Shermer, who is in my film as a skeptic in the Life After Death Project, he wrote to me an inscription saying in his book, one of his books, saying to Paul, in respect of your honest search and integrity. This to me is very important, that one of the chief skeptics of America is saying, without saying whether he agrees with my conclusions, he says he agrees I've been honest in my search and I've done it with integrity. Nothing about this, nothing in this book is made up, contrived, or invented. And I even signed a sworn affidavit at the beginning of the book to impress upon everyone that my account is true and it should be taken as though this were my testimony in a court of law.
Well, why do you think this happened to you? Do you ever give it any thought?
Wow, that's a good one. Yes. First, there's the fact that Fari and I were close for, look, I first met Fari in 1964. He'd come to Washington, D.C. for a World Science Fiction Convention. Could have been 1963. We're talking back to the era of the assassination of President Kennedy. I was a child. I was an avid reader of his magazine, and I made my own amateur science fiction films, which he saw then, and he began to publicize about my childhood films in his national magazine. It was a big, big deal for me. Then I won a movie-making contest in his magazine, another big deal. So after Princeton, where I majored in psychology, I went out to Los Angeles, American Film Institute, Center for Advanced Film Studies, excuse me. And then I really became close with Fari through the decades. And he wrote an introduction to my first book. I dedicated one of the Star Wars books for him. He started a new magazine called Monsterland. He had me as a writer for it. So all of these things, I spent many days in his Acker Mansion going through all of his things. And then in 2006, this was a key moment. I made a film that Universal released to TV. It was, again, on sci-fi. It was all around the world. It was called The Sci-Fi Boys. I love that film. It tells the story of the growth of science fiction in film from the earliest days of the silent movies up to Peter Jackson's King Kong. And Peter Jackson was the host of the movie for me. This was great, great fortune to have Peter Jackson do this for me. you know, the director of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. I'd written the Star Wars books, so George Lucas participated, and so did Steven Spielberg, and so did Academy Award winners like Rick Baker and Dennis Muren. And all of these people who had started out reading Far East magazine and went into the business and did big things were in this film showing how Fari, who they called Uncle Fari, was the great inspiration that aided them to find the direction to have all these great achievements that, by the way, became one of America's biggest exports to the world in terms of commerce, billions of dollars of movies.
Yeah.
Fari was the inspiration. So I think it's because I made the Sci-Fi Boys. When we had the premiere, Fari told me that he thought that was the greatest night of his life. And he was very touched when I took him to the grave of his great friend, George Pal, the great, great producer of movies like The Time Machine and War of the Worlds. And I had him reread the eulogy he had prepared for George Pal's funeral. And Fari, at George Pal's grave, this is in the movie, The Life After Death Project, was all filmed, that part at the grave. And he said, "George, you know, I almost died twice last year to join you, but I'm hoping to live to 100. And he didn't live to 100. He made it to 92. But that closeness between me and Fari, if you can understand, I think that's why he reached out to me. Also because I made a film about him, and he knew I would take it out there to the world. Same reason he approached those two Canadian filmmakers who made the film about him that we showed at the tribute. They were filmmakers, and he knew that they would tell people. So he wouldn't go to all this effort to bridge the worlds and let us know that he was mistaken about life after death, and then just have it fall on deaf ears and not go anywhere. I've spent years getting this message out now.
Well, Paul, fascinating book. I encourage all the listeners to pick it up and take a look at it. It's a fun read. You got to pay a little attention to it because there's a lot of facts in it, but it's certainly very, very interesting. Could you just once more, we're about out of time here, but if you could how can people get a hold of you and what you're doing and, you know, the website and you know, the book?
Sure. Amazon.com for An Atheist in Heaven, for The Life After Death Project, and for all my other films, because I've made about 10. If you go to, I have two websites about my work. One is pauldavids.com. That's David with an S at the end. And the other is pauldavids-artist.com. There you'll see not only about my books and films, but my paintings, because I'm an artist. I've done many, many paintings. And then there's the website lifeafterdeathproject.com, where you can see so many of the details about this research and the people who participated in the film. And I do want to say, David, that in addition to it being a book with a lot of facts, as you say, requires a lot of attention, maybe, and it is hundreds of pages, but it's also filled with photographs, too, that show all the people involved and any of the photos that show the evidence of what happened along the way, because this has been going on for now. We're talking about, I think, about 7 years.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you very much, Paul. It's been a real pleasure. I love what you're doing. And I think our listeners will too, especially as they get into it. It's fascinating stuff, and I think it's well worth people's while to look at it and see what the amazing things you've put together. It's a fascinating story.
I really appreciate your recommendation.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. This show will be available as a podcast on iHeartRadio early next week. You can also find all the old episodes of the Common Sense Spirituality Show on iHeart at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.